The people who were advocating Brexit were doing so on the basis that it was going to be good for Britain, and being good for Britain includes being good for growth in Britain. And so the suggestion that they didn't have an argument in favour of growth or a plan for growth really cuts to the basis of the entire case for Brexit. And although, of course, it's true that Cameron didn't have a plan for what would happen if he'd lost the referendum, but there was no way in which he could have retained a position in office having lost that referendum. He had to go. It was such a fundamental defeat of his entire policy. And it was incumbent on those advocating Brexit to then take over and implement a plan. I mean, to suggest otherwise is simply ludicrous. It makes a nonsense of the whole democratic process of a referendum.
Hello, I'm Brendan Donnelly of the Federal Trust, and today I'll be discussing with John Stevens, the chair of the Federal Trust, recent developments in the European debate in the United Kingdom. John, welcome. We've had a number of utterances by various leading politicians in the United Kingdom on the subject of Europe over the past few weeks. Let's take them one by one, party leader by party leader. Kemi Badenoch drew it. Attention to herself by saying that it was potentially a mistake for Brexit to have gone ahead without there being a growth plan in place to ensure that the United Kingdom took maximum advantage of Brexit. This was seen by some as a recognition that Brexit had failed or an apology for Brexit. What was your reading of that?
Well, it was the most extraordinary remark because if one accepts it at face value that there wasn't a plan for growth when the Conservative government implemented Brexit, it does suggest, well, firstly, why on earth were they in favour of it anyway? And if they didn't have a plan for growth, if they weren't persuaded of it, how could they actually make that case to those who advocated Brexit? How could they make that case in the referendum campaign? I mean, it's raised a whole range of issues that go to the heart of the legitimacy of our departure from the EU. What is strange, though, it is that this has not been picked up more by the opponents of Brexit and by the case for rejoining the EU, which is what logically flows from it. I mean, it was a very strange way of approaching the Brexit issue. And I don't see really how much impact it's really going to have in the absence of a serious rejoin campaign picking up on it. But on the face of it, it was a devastating admission.
But wasn't it just a reworking of the traditional theme that Brexit was a good idea, but it was poorly executed? And also, it's a jab at Cameron, which the Eurosceptics have always echoed, in saying that having had this referendum, he had no plan for behaving how he should behave afterwards, which is a legitimate criticism in the sense that if you think there should have been a referendum, it would have been wise to plan for either possible eventuality.
Well, I don't see how it can be really presented as that, because the people who were advocating Brexit were doing so on the basis that it was going to be good for Britain, and being good for Britain includes being good for growth in Britain. And so the suggestion that they didn't have an argument in favour of growth or a plan for growth really cuts to the basis of the entire case for Brexit. And although, of course, it's true that Cameron didn't have a plan for what would happen if he'd lost the referendum. But there was no way in which he could have retained a position in office having lost that referendum. He had to go. It was such a fundamental defeat of his entire policy. And it was incumbent on those advocating Brexit to then take over and implement a plan. I mean, to suggest otherwise is simply ludicrous. It makes a nonsense of the whole democratic process of a referendum.
But it's to be understood, isn't it, in the terms of the internal conservative debate. Now, Badenoch is saying that it would have been possible to make a success of Brexit. The idea that Brexit was the right policy is absolutely central to today's conservative philosophy. It's the unexamined first premise. And the rest of the world has got to be geared around that term to make that more, slightly more plausible. So I don't attach much importance to coming up with this latest refinement on the idea that it was the execution of Brexit rather than Brexit itself, which was the problem.
No, but I don't think you can separate the execution of Brexit from having a from the principle of it. I mean, if you cannot see how growth can be achieved by Brexit, and you have got no idea how that's going to happen, I mean, how on earth can you advocate it? And this is a devastating criticism if it is taken seriously. But you're right, of course, that it was framed in a context of being able to say, well, Brexit is still the right thing to be doing, but we just didn't carry it out properly. That's true. But of course, it is, on the face of it, a fundamental criticism of the whole project.
How do you think the European debate is going to play out between Reform and the Conservative Party over the coming months and years?
Well, Reform's rise is not really linked anymore to Brexit. It is linked to a much more fundamental disenchantment with conservatism and the nature of conservatism. And I think that it is inevitable that Reform performs increasingly well in elections against conservatives. And at some point, there will come a crisis in Mrs. Badenoch's leadership, whether that's at the time of the forthcoming local elections or whether it's postponed into next year with the elections in Scotland and Wales. But I cannot see her leadership surviving. And then the issue will be who replaces her, and will the debate about that replacement really be about a merger with Reform? I think that there is a recognition that if Reform and the Conservatives continue in opposition to each other, that guarantees the continuation of the Labour government, maybe in coalition with the Liberal Democrats, but at any rate, it shuts out, under our electoral system, any chance of a right-wing government coming back in Britain. And therefore, there has to be a unity on the right, and that unity is now likely to be in the form of essentially a Reform takeover of the Conservative Party. Now, whether all Conservatives MPs will accept such a takeover, that's a rather different question. But that's the direction of travel at the moment. There's no question about that. But the European debate doesn't really feature in that because, in many respects, the Reform Party doesn't want to talk about Brexit very much because it's seen widely as having been a failure. They're now talking about immigration, they're talking about the economy, they're talking about tax. They're trying to adopt a much more mainstream, traditional conservative agenda, but they're doing it untainted by the record of the last conservative government. And that's their success. They are saying essentially what Mrs. Badenoch is saying, but they're saying it without the baggage of having been in office for 14 years. And Reform's trump card, essentially, is, apart from Trump himself and the link to America, is the fact that they are new.
Yes, well, let's park Reform and the Conservatives there for a moment and ask ourselves what significance we should attach to Ed Davies calling for membership of the customs union with the European Union. How will that be welcomed or accepted, commented upon in continental Europe within the EU? And what's its significance for the internal politics of the British debate about Europe?
I don't think it's really going to make much impact in the EU because I think the proposals don't really add up in the sense that the timetable for such an application would be so extended. And he sees it as a response to the current situation of the United Kingdom and in response to the advent of Donald Trump in the United States. I can't see in the 4 year timescale that would be relevant to that presentation. This really getting anywhere. What he is doing is trying to create the pro-European space being the one that the Liberal Democrats will be occupying. and which is currently vacant. But he's doing it from a very much a centre-left position. The design is to become the real opposition to the Labour Party on Europe and also on criticism of an Americanization of British politics via the advent of Donald Trump and the influence that Donald Trump will have. He believes that he can criticize the United States connection in a way that obviously a sitting government, Labour government, cannot do. And in a way, it's reprising the policy that was successful for the Liberal Democrats over the Iraq War, when Charles Kennedy criticized Blair's connection with the United States. So it's a mixture of things. It's trying to position the Liberal Democrats, appealing to a pro-European and anti-American left. It's not really going to be very relevant, in my view, for what would be the centre-right pro-European case, even though it's true that the Liberal Democrats have taken a very large number of Conservative seats. But they took those not so much with Conservative votes, but with Labour votes on a tactical basis. And
Is
so.
the commitment to the customs union perhaps part of a process of grandmother's steps of making the Liberal Democrats veer more and more towards saying rejoin?
Oh, I'm sure that's true. But they're going to be followers of public opinion, not leaders of it. I mean, what they're doing is putting down a marker that they are the pro-European party. They're also putting down a marker that they are the not exactly anti-American, but skeptical of the American connection and certainly hostile to what Trump represents. But they're not doing it in a particularly bold fashion. They're waiting for public opinion to open up space for them. It's a marker. And that's why I don't think it's going to have much resonance on the continent. It's not going to have much resonance in the EU. I think it will have resonance in parts of the Labour Party, however.
And
And
why
in
did you
particular on this American connection and the memories of the tactics that Charles Kennedy used so effectively in the Iraq War issue vis-à-vis Tony Blair.
go for the customs union rather than single market membership?
Oh, because it's the easiest option. It's the first step. A single market raises a whole range of other issues, and also it's going to be much more difficult to negotiate. I mean, it's the first step. I mean, to describe it as cautious would be to overstate.
Overstating the matter, understating the matter. Yes. More generally, do you think that the European Union is interested in partial solutions like the British joining the customs union or joining the single market? Lots of continental Europeans rule that out of court as cherry picking.
I think that's true, and I think that will continue to be the case. Now, the area where Britain can get closer to the EU, and which is going to be coming to the fore perhaps very quickly, is over defence and Ukraine, and what Trump does towards Ukraine, and whether the UK is going to be part of a much more autonomous European defence posture, autonomous of the United States. That's the area where progress can be made and is being made. There's no question about that.
Well, that seems to have been a major topic discussed between Starmer and Donald Tusk at their recent meeting. But then Tusk went off message talking about how he had a dream, in very Lutheran terms, Lutherite terms, I don't know, that he had a dream of the United Kingdom rejoining the European Union. And he talked about this with some eloquence for a few minutes, and he got a very mitigated response from Keir Starmer, who was standing there and clearly very embarrassed by it. Do you think that Starmer is right in saying that it's possible to dance at two weddings, as they say in Germany, one the American and one the European?
Well, I think it's going to be very difficult. It was an embarrassing moment for Starmer, there's no question about that. Quite an amusing one, too. But the European position is that they don't see any possibility of progress on what one would describe as an economic agenda, customs union, single market, and all of that. That is cherry picking. They would like us to fully rejoin the EU at some point. But at the moment, what is the priority is the defense and security aspect, which is a new field for the EU in a whole range of ways and will be dependent on how reliable or unreliable Trump proves in continuing an American defense responsibility in Europe or evading that responsibility or leaving that responsibility entirely. And that's what is going to frame this debate. And the defense issue and the security issue will lead the other part of the agenda. If Europe requires a British participation because American contribution to defense over Ukraine or more generally is declining or is removed altogether under Trump, then that will be a very powerful element in shifting Britain towards Europe more generally. There's no question about that. But I don't think there's any appetite in the British government at the moment to pursue any connection with the EU other than in the defence and strategic area. And they're hoping that that will balance what may have to be a move in the economic sphere towards the United States. I mean, I think there is a desire to see whether the UK will evade tariffs that the US might be imposing upon the EU. And I think there is even a desire in the Labour Party now, and certainly at cabinet level, for some form of free trade deal with America. Now, whether those hopes are even remotely justified is quite a different matter. In my view, I don't think they are. I think the chances of a free trade deal with Trump is vanishingly small. But those hopes definitely exist. And we've had a range of remarks from the First Secretary of the Treasury, for example, 2 days ago, saying that he thought that there would be a trade deal of some kind and that Britain would not be affected by American sanctions. So, I mean, those hopes are there. So I think the way in which the Labour Party is approaching this, the way Starmer sees this, is that on the defence side, he will keep his options open with Europe because that's where the door is open. And on the economic side, he will make a major diplomatic effort to get some form of trade arrangement. And then he will see what Trump actually ends up doing. And of course, this whole situation is fundamentally reactive to what Trump's intentions really are.
If he has deeply firmly based intentions and they don't change,
Well,
as you say,
indeed.
for every 5 minutes of that. Thank you very much indeed. It's a very expert analysis because we're all confused, but at a higher level of sophistication as a result of the discussion. So thank you very much indeed, John. I'm sure we'll be speaking again in the coming weeks about similar topics. If you enjoyed this debate, there are many similar debates on the Federal Trust's website, the Federal Trust for Education and Research. Thank you very much.